Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The incoming Trump administration is set to inherit a foreign policy mess of epic proportions. The conflict in Ukraine and the genocide in Palestine, to mention only two. Will the Biden team intentionally make things worse? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli, in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Istanbul, we have Tariq Cyril Ahmad. He is a historian and political commentator. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start off with George in Budapest. I'm sure Donald Trump is very pleased with himself. His supporters are pleased with himself. Probably that's just about it at this point here. But George, he inherits a foreign policy catastrophe in many ways, okay? It very likely, within a couple of months, he will be called Genocide Donald. He's a man that can't end wars. And the way that could happen is if the Biden administration sets a minefield in front of him. We have to remember the Obama people did that to Trump when he was coming into office in January of 2017. They know how to do it. They know how to make things worse. If they can't win, they're going to make sure Donald Trump can't win either. George, your thoughts?
I agree with you, Peter. I think this is the most dangerous moment. Yep. With 2 months to go before he takes the oath of office. We already read in the previous months that the outgoing Biden administration is going to Trump-proof a number of its policies. And what is going to Trump-proof are the policies in the Middle East and the policies in Ukraine. The Ukraine war is really the Biden administration's baby. I mean, this is it. This is its signature policy. So it's not just going to allow Trump to walk in and say, well, okay, I'm just going to bring this to an end, and then I'll be the peacemaker, and, you know, where's my Nobel Peace Prize, please? So they're going to make things as difficult as possible, which means that I think they're going to try to escalate things. Okay. We already had stories that Biden has signed off on mercenaries American mercenaries in Ukraine, but we've already known that there are American mercenaries. Essentially, it means the United States is going to send mercenaries. In other words, this is going to be an actual policy of getting as many ex-servicemen into Ukraine as possible. And I think the next step will be that they will take off all restraints on the use of long-distance missiles in Ukraine. Again, there's nothing Trump can do about it. And as you mentioned about Obama in his outgoing days, there was nothing Trump could do. He basically, Obama set in motion Russiagate by making all these ridiculous allegations about Russia having interfered in the U.S. election and then expelling Russian diplomats and seizing Russian consulates and imposing sanctions, which means that Trump's hands were tied almost from the beginning. If he follows through, then then relations are very bad. If he goes against, actually denies this, then he seems very weak, and it will be proof that he's a Russian agent. Something like this is going to be in the works. These people are very, very devious and nasty.
Tariq, let's focus on Ukraine, as George has here. Escalation is the only way forward for the Biden administration, because then essentially then it is admitting defeat, which it does not want to do. And that is a kind of a bipartisan thing. Of course, it is Biden's war. But what I foresee, kind of extrapolating from what George said, is that, you know, more long-range missiles, more leeway for the regime in Kyiv to ingratiate itself to NATO powers, et cetera, et cetera. And Trump will just be in a situation where if he wants to de-escalate, he looks weak. He looks like he's Putin's puppet. I mean, there's the Biden administration can make this really, really hard.
You know, I think I agree with both of you on what the Biden administration and the deep state elements that will remain loyal to it and the media that will remain loyal to it will try to do. I agree. But I would take a step back and ask about how much they can do. And there, I'd be more cautious. I think Trump is in a much stronger position than he was in his first term. First of all, he has now really a very powerful mandate. He may get a trifecta. He may get...
But with all due respect, I mean, he has no power right now. He has the prestige, okay? Yes, and he doesn't have the power. He cannot tell the Biden administration, don't do anything until I come into power.
But that's what I was going to address next. What can the Bidenistas really still do? That's the question we have to ask. And we can talk about mercenaries and we can talk about long-range missile strikes. But you know what? Both of them aren't game changers. We have known this for a long time. And the only thing that both of them would produce is more Russian harsh retaliation against Ukraine and probably even more Russian military advances. So it's not like suddenly the Bidenistas have this magic wand with which they can defeat Russia as they have never
been able to do. I think that's the point here. I think we're all actually in agreement, because what I think that in the waning days of this administration, directing this to George right now, is that defeat is inevitable, but it'll be Trump's defeat, not Biden's defeat. That's what they want.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree, Peter, and I think this is what's so important here. What the Biden administration people really want is that this war is going to be wrapped around Trump's neck on January the 20th, within 2 hours of Trump's taking the oath of office. Everyone is going to turn on Trump and say, this is your war. This is, look, all these terrible things that are going on. This is on you. And this Trump will be then very much boxed in, because if, you know, I think he will try to put forward some kind of a peace plan. I mean, there have been all these peace plans that have been floated in the media. And, you know, we're getting the sort of the outlines of it, which is everything frozen in place. And then we get this 800-mile demilitarized zone, which will be manned by European, or in other words, NATO countries' servicemen, which doesn't sound like a very good deal at all. And then, supposedly, oh, well, the question of NATO membership for Ukraine will be put off for 20 years. Now, if that is roughly what Trump is thinking, then I don't think it's a go, because I don't think there's anything really here that will particularly appeal to Russia. There's nothing here to which will appeal to Ukraine. Now, then the question is, well, what does Trump do then? I mean, if he puts forward this peace plan, there are no takers, what does he do then? And I think grave danger there is that he is going to escalate. Then he will essentially go, mm-hmm. Okay, well, then, you know, I did my best, I put this forward, I'm going to see... going to essentially go back to the drawing board. Oh, well, let's see if we can escalate. That's likely to bring the Russians to the negotiating table. So I think that somehow, because this peace plan, I think, it doesn't fly, then we are going to be back on escalation. We are going to be back on this war being absolutely blamed on Trump. And Trump, who I think has an ambitious domestic agenda, is going to be a very unpopular president very, very quickly.
I think that George was
presenting
a theory of the case. I don't think it's George's theories, okay?
Yeah, but I disagree with the theory entirely, frankly. I agree with the part that this type of peace plan that we have been hearing leaks about, like de facto NATO peacekeepers from Europe, not from America, plus 20 years and all that stuff, that's all bullshit. I totally agree, and it won't fly. We know that. But I disagree with what happens next, because I don't think Trump will escalate in Ukraine. Absolutely not. This would only happen if Trump hands over foreign policy basically to Mike Pompeo and other neocons. That remains to be seen. I think Trump, if anywhere, is much keener on being aggressive towards China. And I think Trump has internalized the idea that if anybody gets to escalate in Ukraine again, it's the Europeans. So if Trump's peace plan falters, I think the next step from the Trump administration will be to say, you know what, Brussels, you know what, London, you know what, Berlin, you know what, Warsaw, you know what, Baltics, it's your baby now. And he will actually shift that embarrassment to them. And I have to come back to the fact that Trump has been talking about ending the Ukraine war in this election campaign. He has been quite vocal for a campaign about that. So he knows he has backing for doing that. I really don't think Trump sits there and, I will use a rude expression, is shitting his pants about being burdened with defeat in Ukraine. I really don't think that's true. I don't think Trump will be boxed in that way.
That's very interesting. But George, I mean, again, you know, and we've heard this all our life, you know, who lost China, who lost Russia, who lost Ukraine? That's going to be very powerful. And you know, even though his mandate is clear and it's a landslide victory for him, this is going to be a brick wall that he's going to hit. You know, he gave up, the Russians won, et cetera. NATO's at stake now. This is what he wanted to do, destroy NATO. We could easily go on what they're going to paint him with, okay?
Does it matter anymore? That's the question. You're laying out a narrative that will matter for Rachel Maddow. But does it matter anymore? That's the real
question. George, does the intelligence community matter?
Well, I think they do. And I think that, I think Tariq's raising a very good point. I mean, he says, yeah, look, Trump wants to end this war. He doesn't see Russia as an enemy. The people around Trump, his immediate circle, want to end this war. That makes sense. But then, yeah, you still got the intelligence and the security apparat. You still got whole kind of Washington national security bubble. And they are going to absolutely resist this policy. And as you say, Peter, you know, there is the question of who lost Ukraine. I mean, he basically... If he just does this, gives up on Ukraine, and so says, hey, okay, well, this war is lost. The repercussions are enormous. I mean, the repercussions for NATO, the repercussions for the whole transatlantic alliance will be enormous. Trump will then be burdened by this. Now, we have to think of that. You know, is Trump such a bold, imaginative person who say, "Okay, yeah, I want to completely transform the geopolitical scene"? You know, there's no evidence of that Trump does indeed want to undertake these very bold steps. You know, we saw him during his first.
I have to jump in here, gentlemen. We have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter LaBelle. Here we're discussing some real news. George, you built up a lot of steam in the end of the first block there. I want you to let the rest of it out. Go ahead.
Well, I think that Trump, you know, showed, I mean, you know, when he was at his boldest and most imaginative, which was in 2015, 2016, he really didn't do very much. Now, we can say, oh, well, that was then. He's going to do things differently this time, that he will undertake the bold imaginative steps, maybe, but he hasn't given any indication of any of this during this campaign. He's only talked in very, very vague terms about the war in Ukraine, that wouldn't have happened if I had been president, and so on. He's given no indications that he is ready, essentially, to rethink the entire NATO structure, the entire transatlantic alliance, which is clearly, it does need rethinking. It does need to be dismantled. But Trump doesn't give any sign that that's where he wants to go. I think he just thinks that he, as his personality, his ebullience, can just simply bang heads together and get a deal done on the table. I don't think he's thought through how you do this and just how the implications of this.
Yeah, Teddy, I mean, we've all seen the leaks, obviously intentional leaks, the dribs and drabs of things. And I think all three of us would agree it doesn't really make any sense, because the most important element that is missing is that, well, what do the Russians actually think about it? That's never taken into consideration. And if you, I think all three of us and our viewers know that Russia wants security. It can only have peace if it has security. And that's something that's not part of the Western equation. As a matter of fact, the Biden administration's ultimate goal in its last months is just to keep it going on. It's not to win. It's just to keep it going. And that is a winning recipe in Washington and in Brussels. Go ahead, Tariq.
Yeah. I mean, can I say two things? Look, first of all, I agree with you that Trump is in danger of being the target of a who lost Ukraine narrative. But don't forget, American politics also has narratives about who got us into. And they can be quite powerful. If you think about the Vietnam War, it's an open question to me what's more powerful, who lost Vietnam or who got us into Vietnam, actually. If you think about Trump's first term, let's not overlook that he actually did make the decisions that led to abandoning the Afghanistan war, right? It was done then later in a catastrophic fashion under Biden, but Trump actually paved the way for that. So we have a little bit of a precedent for him being capable of not simply being a slave to what people leave behind to him. The other thing, once again, is I think he's much less afraid of other Republicans now. The sort of internationalist wing of the Republican Party has been destroyed. This is very important. He's less afraid of the media. He's less afraid of the other branches of government. He will actually reshape the judiciary once again, anyhow. I really don't think we can conclude what he did in his first. We can conclude from what he did in his first time to the second. Although I agree with George that we also have very little to go by when we try to guess what he will do in the second. However, one thing I would argue, it's not going to be very similar to term one.
I think it will be very different. We're all in agreement there. George, also the issue of what's going on in Gaza, Palestine, and to extrapolate out Iran. And this is something that, we were led to believe, I assume it's true, that the Netanyahu government is overjoyed in having Donald Trump return to the White House. Now, we will find out one day to what degree the anti-genocide, pro-Palestinian, whatever you want to call it, voters impacted the election. I think it did. Was it meaningful? Was it determinative? I don't know. But that's on the agenda. That is a red line for many, many people. The majority of people in the Democratic Party, also large percentage in the Republican Party, call it for what it is. It's a genocide. Like I said in the beginning of the program, Genocide Joe can easily turn into Genocide Donald. George.
Right. Okay. If I could just address a couple of things that Tariq said first. It's true that Trump set in train the Biden's exit from Afghanistan, but the fact is Trump didn't follow through on that. It's again, Trump had these peacemaking impulses, but he didn't follow through. He also said he was going to withdraw from Syria. He didn't follow through. In fact, he bombed Syria, and then on Ukraine he went and did something that Obama didn't want to do. He started sending lethal weapons to Ukraine. So you've got to set that on the other side, which is that, well, he had these ambitious ideas that he would be the peacemaker, but in fact, he pursued the opposite policies. That's why I think that, this what happens out when he presents his peace plan, maybe he's going to say, that's it. Okay, I'm going to pull the plug on Ukraine. But he may go the other way and say, well, hey, I presented this peace plan. Russia didn't go for it. And so, now's the time to escalate. But just to return to your point, again, Genocide Joe will become Genocide Don in no time at all. Again, he will absolutely be hit with responsibility for everything. Every time somebody gets shot, every time you get a refugee camp that's destroyed, every baby burned will be on Trump. And if Netanyahu takes Trump's victory as, hey, that's a green light that I can do whatever I like, then again this will be on Trump. And then what is Trump going to do? Is Trump going to try to rein him in? If he tries to do that, he, of course, again, courts unpopularity. Again, he can do it. I mean, he can absolutely, he does have a mandate, and he can, just as on Ukraine, he can pursue a serious peace plan. He can absolutely, really get tough on Netanyahu. Question is, Will he do it? Will he really bite the bullet and pursue that policy? I don't know.
I don't know either. Teddy, it's very interesting in this time from now to the inauguration day. Do you see that Israel escalating and demanding that the U.S. go in its defense vis-a-vis Iran? Because this is a very, very delicate time right now. The Israelis are very keen political operators. They understand American politics very well and this interim period. I think it's a very dangerous time right now. Tariq.
I think the Israelis run part of American politics. But I agree totally. And I also agree with George that there's no hope, I think, that Trump will be better in any way in resisting the Gaza genocide or in stopping the Gaza genocide, which an American president could easily do if they wanted. I think it will turn from genocide, Joe, to genocide. Donald, I still think it was right to punish the genociders who were in office, right? It was their turn to be punished. And next time, maybe we'll have to punish Trump if we can. But the issue is that you talk about has to do with Iran, I think, most of all. And there's, of course, this sense that Trump is supposed to have said to Netanyahu that do whatever you have to do, in essence, and that the Israelis could see this as encouragement to attack Iran again, and this time especially to go after Iran's nuclear installations, or at least the ones they can destroy. Not all of them are easy targets. However, I think there is one flip side to this, which is I feel you have to analytically separate between is he giving the Israelis a window of opportunity and is he offering them U.S. support? Because I think it's possible that the Trump message is go in and do what you have to do, but don't count on us. And that would be a very different message. Because look, there is also J.D. Vance, who has actually come out and said that we don't want a war with Iran. I'm paraphrasing, but it was pretty much that what he said. And I don't think that comes out of nowhere. Trump is very nationalistic and transactional, and he isn't stupid. I don't think he wants to be the next president who fights an enormously wasteful war in the Middle East on behalf of the Israelis. So that's, I think, where it gets complicated. But
that makes sense to me. But, George, I mean, we've heard this before. When Obama was coming into office, there was a bombing campaign in Gaza, and the incoming administration said, you know, do whatever you're going to do, but have it over before we come into office. And the day before, it actually came to an end. There are rumors that he's actually said the same thing. Do what you have to do, but wrap it up before I come into office. I don't know if the Israelis don't care what Biden has to say. Why would they care about what Trump has to say, George?
Well, the problem is with that, wrap it up before we come to power is, Israel wrap it up? I mean, is Israel in a position to wrap it up? Because I don't think it is. I mean, I think if Israel were in a position to wrap things up, it would have done it. I mean, you know, I'm sure they're not that happy about a war that's been going on for more than a year, and they're not able to wrap it up, which means that, you know, when Trump comes in, that war will still be ongoing. And then what does Trump do? You know, then again, you know, he can either, you know, continue with this, and therefore this is his genocide done. Or he can then try to, you know, essentially, you know, bite the bullet and start threatening to cut the Netanyahu off. You know, I'm not at all sure he can do that. There's also this, as you mentioned, the Iranian aspect to it, that we've now had the sudden indictments of people who allegedly were, you know, on an assassination plot.
Amazing, isn't it?
In the bowels of Tehran to kill Trump.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, does he take that seriously? Is this something that he's going to actually pursue? No, again, maybe he's going to be very imaginative. But the pattern with Trump, and when we saw this again, you know, is that he does talk a good game, and he makes all sorts of very, very sensible, rational, you know, first steps towards a sensible policy, and then he doesn't do it. I mean, again, look at North Korea. He did something no other president did. He sort of made his first overtures. He had these meetings with North Korean leaders, and then nothing. It just, you know, it died on the vine. So again, perfectly reasonable for him to, you know, to actually do something, you know, about Israel and to stop, you know, Israel just sort of, you know, essentially threatening, blackmailing, extorting from the United States. But I mean, you know, you may just simply not be able to pursue that, and then it becomes genocide Don.
Well, we're going to find out if Trump learned anything from his first term and the failures of the Biden administration. Until then, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Istanbul and in Budapest. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.